Welcome to Going Mental. This is your host, Eileen Kelly. I'm interested in the things many of us face but don't always talk about. After spending 5 months at McLean Hospital working on my mental health, I'm back. A little more insightful and with plenty of stories to share. Expanding on my usual topics of sexuality and intimacy, this season takes into account everything I learned during my stay. I'll be bringing together a wide range of guests, some beloved, some contentious, to discuss work, love, and the bizarre phenomenon that is modern life. Join me as we try to make sense of it all.
Hey everyone. Okay, so today's episode is brought to you by Squarespace. If you work as a creative, it's so, so important to have a website to display your work. Think of it as like a public resume. If you want to start a new business, or let's say a clothing line, or opening a store, or even a nail salon, Squarespace makes this extremely easy with all sorts of different templates. You can literally have your website up and running in a matter of hours. Not only can they help you create your first website, but they can also help you claim a domain and even create an online shop. So whatever your project name or your company, Squarespace has you covered. I know it's the holiday season, but there's really no better time to get started. So go seize the day and create your website. Head to squarespace.com/goingmental for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code GOINGMENTAL to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
On today's episode, I'm joined by American singer-songwriter and visual artist Kilo Kish. Her work finds themes in self-exploration, communication, and technology. She is known for her studio album, Reflections in Real Time, as well as being a muse for brands such as Chanel, Levi's, and Adidas. Can you introduce yourself for those who aren't familiar with you?
I'm Kilo Kish, and I am an artist and a singer, director, a bunch of things.
Yeah, modern day Renaissance woman. Can you tell me a little bit about your background, like where you're from? I know you grew up in Florida.
Yeah, so I grew up in Florida. I also grew up in, I went to elementary school in New Jersey. I was kind of, I don't know, straight A kind of nerdy student. When I got to high school, I was like, I really am interested in art. I was really interested in fashion. And when I was in high school, it was around that same time as like, you know, MySpace, and we're able to see all of these, you know, different kids and people from different cities. And I was got super obsessed with like moving to New York when I was like 16-ish. And I was like, I need to find a way to go to art school. And so I started taking all these classes, and then ended up getting into Pratt. And then I moved to New York when I was 18. And then from there, I was studying there. And 1 year, my financial aid didn't go through. And I was kind of forced to just get a job in New York. So I got a job, started working in restaurants. And then from there, I kind of started making music on the side around 1920-ish. And then it kind of took off. And then from there, I was doing music. It was something that I was never really, as a child, I didn't sing, or, I mean, I wrote a lot of poems and things like that, but it kind of took off in a way that I wasn't expecting. And then it kind of set my life in a completely different trajectory, which was fun, but weird.
Well, it's also nice, I think, that it was such a natural progression. It like happened so organically, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit more. Can you tell me a little bit about your family?
Yeah, so my family is pretty big. My dad, he sold cars and he sold computer software. My mom, she worked in IT when I was young. She got in a car accident when I was about 6 or 7, and then she was put on disability, so she was kind of incapacitated and not able to work for years. So it kind of changed the trajectory of like our family structure, and we ended up moving to Florida just because it was better for her her body, like not dealing with the cold of New Jersey and all of that. So then that's kind of when I moved back to Florida, and then was able to, you know, kind of become obsessed with, you know, fashion and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, and then go on that path that you just explained. Do you feel like you were a creative, like, kid?
I was so, like, that's all I did. Because I was home with my mom a lot. So I wasn't really playing outside as much just during that time when she was sick. So I kind of would make up my own like games and like come up with things to draw for hours or write full books of poetry or like, you know, make up a fake store or fake brand and like play with it. Like when I was a kid, I just would love to like play those kind of like solo imaginative kind of games. So yeah, and my mom was always like, she always says that I was like born bored. So she was like the only thing that could keep me stimulated, she learned. When I was like younger, she would always try to buy me like whatever, Barbies or things like that. And she found like the only thing that would really keep me for the whole day engaged was like paper and crayons or something that, you know, I could play with and like over and over and over versus like, oh, I'm bored of this toy. Just like throw it.
Yeah, like create something new.
Yeah, totally.
Isn't it fascinating when you talk about or just even look back at how you were as like a child or I don't know, even like in middle school, like the growth, but also the similarities like as an adult?
Yeah. I mean, you start going to therapy, you start kind of trying to figure out your quirks and things and you realize that like a lot of them are just like your personality. You've been like that the whole time. Like I was like the kid that would like leave the sleepover all the time. I just was
really
like, I just was like, I just can't anymore. It's 9 o'clock. I need to just do my own thing for a while. And my personality is the same now. It's like, I can go to parties, I can go to things, but I do have a very like, I know I just have a low tolerance for like social interaction.
Or like bullshit.
Yeah, after a while I just get really burnt out and I'm like, I can't, I need to be by myself for a while.
That's good though, to like know how to be by yourself and like be your own best friend. I think that's really important and like people seem to struggle with that a lot these days.
Yeah, I'm very, very comfortable by myself. Like, in fact, like I love it. Like days where I have my work to do, whether it be like packaging or solo work that I can do by myself, creative direction stuff. And I'm like, wow, I get to just sit on my computer. No one's going to bother me. I can just do this for 10 hours straight and turn my music on and just get in a zone. So for me, like getting in those kind of creative flow spaces are integral to the work that I do. But for me personally, like having to play the role of a person in public is kind of exhausting for me sometimes. So I need to like have those moments of, you know, just what do I actually think by myself as a single human in the world? And how can I express that through the work that I make?
Yeah, and like that moment of separation.
Totally.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about when you moved to New York, and you have talked publicly about being a server at like La Esquina.
Yeah.
And like Miss Lily's and like these very like downtown kind of like, I don't know, culturally like hotspot places. I feel like you probably waited on like the same group of kind of professional elites that and like the group that you now belong to as like a well-known successful creative. Have you ever thought or did people ever treat you differently kind of pre-success versus now?
I feel like in those restaurants during that time period, and in New York in general, I feel like restaurant culture is so important. And I think that the people that restaurants choose as servers and as waiters, they already fit the mix of the people that they're serving essentially. So it always felt like working at La Esquina or working at Miss Lily's when it first opened, it never really felt like we weren't supposed to be there. Like the vibe was very much like we're all creating. And I think hospitality, part of it is that it's the servers and the ambiance and all of that is creating a feeling that people want to go there to like keep, you know, re-experiencing. So I always felt like comfortable. I mean, I definitely, when I first moved to New York, it was a little bit funny to be introduced to it because restaurant culture has its very like dark, dark sides as well. And so I was kind of this green, hey, I just want to be a host here at La Esquina. And like, I just wasn't aware of like the drugs and the partying and the all of that attached to restaurant culture. And being so young and being in college, they definitely, and them being a lot older than me, a lot of people I worked with, they tried to shield me from it. But I feel like in New York, it is inevitable that you're gonna
run into
it. Immersed in that kind of world anyway. I had just moved from Florida, and I think I was just getting the lay of the land of downtown New York, and to be like thrust into like one of the most popular restaurants at the time, it was kind of wild. It was like Jay-Z and Beyonce would come, and you know, whatever, Kanye West would come, or like all of these different people, and you're bringing them to their tables, and everyone was really cool, actually. Like, I never felt, everyone was really sweet and nice, and I think at that time for me, they saw me as, you know, I just look like a little girl from Florida, you know? They're like, oh, bless her heart. She doesn't know what I'm for, you know? I mean, I learned over time, but yeah, it was really fun. I still am always like, those were like really, really fun times for me, even just doing the coat check at some of these places on New Year's Eve. Like some of the memories that I have of just, you know, it was a time of me making my first money, you know, like it was the first time someone handed me $100 bill and was like, hey, that like you see you doing your homework in the coat check and they're like, here, just have $100. And you're like, okay, thanks. You know? So it was really fun, actually.
Do you feel like there was a culture shock coming to New York? Like, in, I'm guessing you came like 18, 19.
Yeah, I came fresh, like 18. I stayed in the dorms my first year, so I was a little bit shielded. Like, I was still kind of in that campus mode. But during that time, there were like two places you could hang out. You could go, you could stay and be like extremely hipster in the Brooklyn Williamsburg area, or you could be like, become like, go into the city and like, you know, be that kind of girl. And I think at first I was like, oh, I'm just going to go to these loft parties in Bushwick or whatever. But then after when I went to one party, a friend invited me to like the city. And I remember it was like NERD was playing their first kind of shows back. And I met so many cool people. And it was my first like real New York City event. And it was somewhere downtown. And I was like, I know this is me. Like, I prefer this. Like, yeah. From there, I just was like constantly every night going to the city. And I met my friend, our mutual friend who passed away, Justin. I met Justin and I met so many people that night. And I was like, this is for me. Like, I really felt like this is where I'm supposed to be. And I'm going to just keep meeting all of these people and see what happens from it, you know?
Yeah. And once again, like staying on that organic path, like just meeting like-minded individuals. And like, so you came like 2012, 2013.
I came in 2000 and was it, when did I graduate? 2009,
2008. 2009. Okay. 2009.
Yeah.
My brother, like he went to school in New York. He's older than I am. And I would come and visit him. I was like really young, like honestly in middle school, I came and visited him once, but that was probably like 2009. And I feel like that's when like the DIY scene in Brooklyn was like so big, with like all of those, like, yeah, you put on your own show and like very hipster, like everyone wearing Doc Martens.
Yeah.
It's funny. I relate to you in that sense, because I definitely hung out through my brother with that scene. But for me, it was, I felt more home in like New York, downtown Manhattan.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I was like, yeah, I can't really, I just got really like bougie for 2 seconds. And I was just like, hey, I was like, no, I have to go, you know, to party downtown, you know? And, but yeah, it was like, it was really, really fun to just meet all of these people. And then through restaurants, I was able to meet so many people as well. And it kind of became this organic thing. My first job was, Justin was with me. And my financial aid didn't go through. And I was like, what am I going to do? Should I move back to Florida or should I stay here? And he's like, let's try to go find you a job. So we just walked around the Bowery and we were walking around all these shops and stores. And I was like, can I work here? And they're like, do you have any experience?
And you're like, no, but I'll work hard.
No, but I need to stay here. And so there was like one shop, and it was this, I didn't realize it at the time, but it was like kind of a revolutionary shop. It was like a natural hair black girls like salon on Houston and Bowery, right before there was the Whole Foods there. So it was across the street. And And I walked in and I was like, hey, like, I don't know what this is, but the store's cute. Can I work here? And they were like, as an intern? And I was like, no, I need to get paid. And then they were like, okay.
And they gave you a job? That's awesome.
And I got paid $7.50 an hour. And I worked. And I worked my way to, like, you know, kind of being like the one of the managers of the shop. I did payroll. I would open and close. And it was right on Houston and Bowery. So we would just sit outside. A lot of like retail and those kind of shops, it's really fun to work in New York because you're just like hanging out and your friends come and visit you for the day. And it doesn't really feel like work because you're just in the mix of everything. So we would just sit outside and like run into people and be like, oh, hey, come in the shop. And then we would like talk for an hour. And so it was really fun.
Are those like really kind of warm and positive memories when you think back on that time in your life?
Well, I think so because I was just so young. I think being 18, 19, you don't need much as like a young person. It's like, oh, I could eat pizza every day, or I could eat, you know, I can live off of like dollar falafels, and you know, I think just being there was so fun, and it was hard work. It was like get up at like 8 a.m. and go plow the snow in the front of the store and all of that. But I think just having that year just to myself to just work in the city and meet people, it was so fun without the need to also be in college at the same time. And it was only 1 year of my life, but I think it really defined and allowed me to meet people that I'm so close with and have grown with in so many different kinds of ways. And from that window, working in that shop, I was just sitting in the window and I would get street cast for, you know, modeling jobs and things like that. And people would come in and be like, hey, do you want to like come to this casting for this thing? And I was like, okay, whatever, I'll come. How much is it? $250? Great. So I would like go do those kind of things as well. And then I got into FIT the next year and started studying textile design. And then it kind of became this weird thing of balancing school and modeling jobs that would come up, and my professors didn't really get what was happening. But I feel like my era was like the pre-influencer era, essentially. So it's kind of like balancing, like actually having your own vibe and your own kind of following, and then balancing that with like kind of the traditionalness of like college. So it was really confusing for my professors. They were kind of like, well, you can't miss class. And I was like, dude, this is gonna pay for this entire class. I need to do this. And then eventually trying to get them to understand like working, but also that college life.
Well, because it was kind of also the beginning of social media. It was really like those years, like no one even really understood Instagram, I don't know, Facebook. And just like the, you know, 10 years later, like the amount of impact it has, like Instagram, Facebook having that blackout.
Yeah.
Remember when it went dead for 5 hours, and I like read in the or saw in the news that like huge corporations like lost billions of dollars in the 5 hours, and like the whole world was like freaking out. And it's just crazy how much weight these like stupid apps have.
Yeah. It's kind of nuts, actually. It could just all go like that. You know, what if people switch platforms and then Instagram doesn't matter, or like Snapchat or whatever else, or Vine. Remember Vine? And then it was like not on. So it's one of those things where you're like, yeah, you could be building something in a space, but I feel like it's also important to just build it naturally as well, with on the ground things, or to diversify a bit, just not only on social media, because it is kind of fickle in that way.
No, totally. I think that's really good advice for anyone who's listening. Like, just make sure you have also just an identity or like tangible things outside of these platforms, because like you said, like they can be gone in an instant. I actually got my account deleted like 4 or 5 years ago. It got deactivated for a little bit, and I called Justin, or mutual friend for people who are listening, like freaking out, being like, holy shit, like everything I've built or worked for is gone in an instant. I ended up getting it back like a week later, but for that week I felt like very like my identity was very fractured. But I'm really grateful for that experience because I think after that, I was like, holy shit, I need to have stuff that's going on for me outside of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Why did it get deactivated?
I think it was like a blip in the system. I don't know. I happened to like know this photographer friend of mine knew like the woman who runs the fashion on Instagram, Eva Chen. Mm-hmm. And this was years ago. I think even today it would be harder to like get in contact with someone. So I was able to get in contact and they like checked out the account and I got it back. Like I didn't break any rules, but yeah. I was like, holy shit. Like that's how I make money. Like that's how I make my money.
Yeah.
Like it's very weird to have that tied into it, you know?
Totally. Totally.
Do you feel like the boom of the internet or like social media has, in what ways has it impacted your career?
I kind of came up in a time where you would have Tumblrs. So I would just throw songs on Tumblr like back in the day and it would get picked up by press outlets and things like that. So I think without just being able to release your own music, whether it be through SoundCloud or YouTube or just throwing stuff into the ether, there would be no me. Like a lot of artists wouldn't exist because before that, there was only the traditional route of finding record label, getting a deal, you know, having them have control over when they're going to put your work out or not. And so all of that is still fine to do, but there's so many artists that just would never have gotten the time of day. You know, if you're not willing to play that particular game, you can still have a good career in music. You can still set what you want to do or how you want to do it. You can do Patreon or you can do Bandcamp or SoundCloud or whatever you want to do. Or you can even just release things on your own and throw them onto Spotify or, you know, all
YouTube. YouTube. Yeah.
So there's so many more ways to get discovered. And I think in that way, it's good. But I don't love the pressure that the industry puts on artists to also make work, but also to be these social media figureheads at the same time. Because equally, like, you know how much it takes to run, you know, a social media channel. That's a lot of work. You need help doing it. And I think a lot of times within our industry, they're just like relying on the artists to like fully promote it themselves. And they're like, well, you have to figure out how to get everybody to care about this. And it's like, yes, but also have to do the work. And then I also have to make the videos. And I also, it just kind of adds an additional layer of content. And the amount of content that's asked of people now is really, it's really hard to do by yourself.
100%. Yeah. It's like almost like, okay, the positive is it's democratized the music industry, fashion industry, you know, anyone with a smartphone or internet access can now put their work out, like you said, get discovered. But at the same time, it's added this immense pressure. And I have definitely felt like burnout before, you know, I try to run Instagram Killer and Sweet Thing and then try to do my personal and I'm doing a podcast and la la la. And it's like, I feel like in the past or the more traditional route before like influencer culture, it's like you have a publicist, you know, I'm sure as like a singer, musician, you have a PR person, they're doing your public image, like you have team members. So it's not all resting on your shoulders.
Exactly. And I think even now the role of publicity is so different because it's like what's actually interesting to magazines right now or what's actually interesting to outlets, I think a lot of times it's just drama, you know, versus the actual work, you know?
Yeah, it's never about the work. Like yeah. Even someone was on like Jimmy Kimmel, just like popped up. I watch YouTube on my TV and like they had probably like an hour long interview and like the headline was like the dumbest thing about like who they're dating or where they're shopping or like some explosive, a little bit sexual like yeah. innuendo that they said during their interview. Like it's like they don't even really ask them anymore. And do you experience that? Like do they sometimes skip over the actual shit you're working on?
Well, I think well, with me, it doesn't happen so much because I don't really have Like, I don't really do like hot takes like that, you know? But I think for a lot of artists, like, if you say one thing or do one thing, and then it's like people want to harp on it for forever and ever and ever. And it's like you have to then keep talking about it. Or even based off of like the podcast about Madison Beer that I was listening to, where she was saying how she, you know, had been vulnerable and said she was dealing with these things regarding her mental health. And then now it's always a conversation that she has to have. So I think it's tough because the work a lot of times does get overshadowed by the personal. But I think people are also just generally more interested in how people, like what makes people tick, more than like just, oh, you have a new song out? Cool. I think it's really wanting to understand the person more behind the music. And I think that a lot of things have created a environment for that. I think reality television has created an environment for that, or even social media, or just the way our news is consumed as well. It's just an environment of like inflammatory like remarks, and people click on that.
And it like our attention spans.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and like just even like story, like the invention of stories on Instagram or Snapchat stories, like that didn't even exist. Like I feel like 3 or 4 years ago, like it was just like grid posts. And now it's like there's 15 seconds or 30 seconds. And I feel like I feel the detrimental effects of like, holy shit, for me to sit down and watch a movie for over 2 hours. Like sometimes I'm like, oh man, I'm struggling.
No, it kind of gives me anxiety to think of watching a whole movie. Like I'm definitely more of a TV person. Like I'm like, okay, I got 30 minutes. That's what I have to do this show. But yeah, I totally agree. I think our attention spans have kind of like sped and sped and sped to where, I'm sorry, it's hard to explain yourself in 150 words, or it's hard to explain yourself in a caption, or to get to the depth or any truth of like who you are in 7 seconds of a story, or, you know? So I think we're all kind of showing these little blips of who we are and trying to come across in some way that feels authentic. But I feel like even the word authenticity is so loaded at this point.
Yeah, I'm like, does it even really exist?
Yeah.
No, because like I'll go through phases of posting on Instagram where I'm like, okay, I'm just like, I don't have the bandwidth to really give a fuck this week. So like I'm going to post my cat, or just like literally not think about, I'm just posting whatever I want in the moment. And then sometimes I'll have moments where I'm like, oh shit, well, I haven't gotten a job this week. So like maybe I need to hone in more on sexual health, or like hone more into mental health and like make my captions more related to that. And it's like this very weird tightrope to walk.
Especially if it's how you make money as well.
Do you feel like you put a lot of thought into your online persona, or like how you appear online?
I think I do. But also I tend to kind of overthink it and then not do it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm kind of one of those people where it, like, I'll be like, oh, should I post this, or should I wait, or should I? Because for me, a lot of the stuff that I want to post is work related, or I'll want to post like a new song I'm working on, or I'll want to post artwork or things like that. But then I'm like, oh, I don't really want to spoil it for them when it's out. So those are like the things that I'm working on day to day. And so I often feel like I don't have time. I don't actually have anything to post, because it's like I want to have the project be in full for you to see it all at once, versus me showing all these like little bits and pieces, and then someone's gonna come at me for not actually putting the song on the album, or like, what happened to that song you posted here or there? And then I think a lot of times, like, the nature of creative work is like you're fitting these pieces together. And I think when you show things, well, at least for me, like when I feel like I show things too early, it kind of gives a skewed view of like what the actual project is. It kind of confuses more than it like helps to show. But that's my personal like feelings. I'm sure it doesn't matter. I'm sure people would prefer to see as much as they can of like the process of making things. But I think that's just a little bit of my like art brain is like, it's not ready. I need to like shield it a little bit.
Yeah, it's like my baby. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, I want to show it in the way that I want to show it, and this is not going to do it justice. You know, me just kind of giving you a little blip in the studio, or it's not finished, or it's, But that's also just my own like perfectionism, like bullshit too. You know, I like things to be as finished as possible before I share them, but I know that it's not necessary.
Do you feel like you shield more of your personal life from the, like, you're a public person, you're an artist, you know? Do you feel like you, yeah, shield sharing kind of more of your personal day-to-day life?
I almost never do. If I wasn't an artist, or if I wasn't like doing this as a, for a living, I don't think I would have social media, because I just don't ever think about it. Like I'll look at it, like, and then I'll like go through people's stories and things like that. And I generally like am more confused by like looking at it. It kind of just brings up so many existential questions for me that it kind of like breaks my mind a little bit every time I look at it, because it's just so much
content.
Yeah. And it's so random. And I think for me, as somebody that likes to really think deeply about lots of different concepts, every little picture and everything, I'm like, well, I wonder why this is like this, or I wonder why. And it just like kind of sends me into a spin. So for me, I get overstimulated really, really easily. And I know that, like, I can't, it's kind of sucks, but I can't really watch the news. I don't really watch, you know, things that are gonna disturb my mental space. But I've learned that by now, that I can't go down this rabbit hole about everything every day. I will get nothing done. So I kind of force myself to not look at it as much. But I think I would not have social media if I was if I wasn't an artist. But I'm also, in the same token, I'm trying to figure out how to share better with my personality type, and, you know, the way that I see the world, being an introvert and not really necessarily wanting to share everything, but, you know, wanting to connect with fans and connect with people that, you know, like my work.
Yeah. Do you ever have moments where you're like, oh, I wish I could just get rid of social media and like not even have to have this? Like, well, do you feel like you have to have it?
I feel like, yeah, you definitely have to have it, because, well, I guess you don't have to, but I feel like I do at the stage that I'm at. If I was bigger, like if I was in a place in my career where money was not a problem anymore, or like I had no problem connecting with fans in other ways, then I think I would totally, yeah, I would totally not have it, or have it be private or whatever. But I think as you're like on the come up still, and you need to grow your fans and grow all that, I think I need it. It helps people to know what's going on with me. It's easier for them to, like, I can go on live and talk to people that actually want to hear what I have to say about things. And I think it's the best way to get your personal message across versus like a press outlet.
Yeah, and they're skewing it, or like taking your whole hour-long interview and then like writing up a few sentences, or
yeah.
Yeah. So it's like you almost having social media, like you take a little bit of ownership over your narrative, which is nice.
Totally, totally. And that's great, because it's a lot of times like I did an article recently and they were like, oh, she has Molly Ringwald style and her Molly Ringwald inspired style. And I was like, I just don't know who Molly Ringwald is, but, you know, like, but that's, and it's not a problem that they wrote it, but I had to Google. I was like, wait, who is Molly Ringwald?
16 candles. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's cool. It's nice to see people's interpretations of you. It doesn't need to be changed. Like, I don't need to change what they wrote, but it's also nice to have your own like truth, you know, as well, outside of like what it can be skewed as.
Well, I can also imagine as an artist, that's so, so important to not feel like, yeah, someone else is kind of writing your story, or the way, like, I think how you want to put your work out, how you want to be out in the world is like very personal to artists.
Totally. And I think it took a long time. It's taking time for me to understand that deeply and know that there's always an opportunity to, you know, craft that for yourself. Because I think a lot of times, at least for me, I look at other people's roads and other people's ways of being in the world. And I can sometimes be like, oh, well, damn, I'm like not good at like doing that, or not good at like, I don't do enough of this, or I should do more of that. And there's so many ways to get to where you want to go, you know? And I think remembering that you can craft that yourself and what you're actually skilled at, you can hone in on and push forward with that, as opposed to trying to like do someone else's way, you know?
I wanted to talk about being like a musician and musical artist, and like, I'm not a musician like at all, but I think about this a lot, of like sexism within the music industry.
Yeah.
I love to watch music videos. I love to listen to music, and just seeing new people who are coming up in the world of music and how much that is a part of their image. And I'm wondering, like, how do you combat just, I guess, sexism in your career, but also I associate your public image as like not being particularly pop star or not being super like sexy. And I wonder if that's intentional.
Yeah, I think just naturally, that's not my vibe. So like naturally, it's not what I think about. Like, of course, there are things that make me feel sexy, but I don't know that it's necessarily what that particular look is. You know, I feel sexy by like, you know, wearing all black, or like wearing something oversized and like cool. Like, that makes me feel sexy, but I don't know that. I don't know that that's necessarily like the main way that people view sexiness.
Yeah, or I mean, maybe not so much sexy as like sexualized. I think that's what I meant.
Yeah. Again, it's just not my it's not what I tend to explore in my work. But I do know that like it's just par for the course, essentially. Like, I think that's just what people expect out of their pop stars.
Yeah.
And I mean, the industry does glamorize that and does, you know, make it kind of people, well, she's hot, so lead with her being hot. You know what I mean? Like, even though
her sex sells. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Like, it's kind of like, for a lot of people, it's a no-brainer. And for a lot of people, they do feel, you know, comfortable in that role of being like, hey, I do like want my tits and my ass out, and I take all these clothes off because I want to look like this. And hopefully it's them saying that's what they want, you know, as opposed to it being a pressure.
Well, that's what I really want to get at, is like, have you ever felt that pressure, you know, being in the music industry for a while?
Yeah. I mean, someone tweeted recently, like, I wonder if Kilo Q should have sexualized herself if she would have been bigger. And
that's so fucked up.
No, but I honestly think it was just a question, because all her other peers that she came up with went down that road, but I kind of stayed this kind of like quirky, artsy, you know, weird, you know, whatever the different words are to describe the way that I am in the world. I think, yeah, I didn't do that. And it was an active choice, but also that's just not my personality to like want that for myself. I've just never been like that, even in my personal life. There hasn't been pressure, because I think people that work with me understand me and know what I try to get at in my art. And that's asking questions, that's thinking conceptually. And my work just isn't that. So I don't really have the pressure. But I would say that it probably does, like, you know, hold me back a tiny bit. You know, I think people, they're not getting what they expected. So sometimes they're a little bit, maybe they're leaving, oh wait, I was expecting something, but I got this. And so I don't know what to do with this. You know, like, well, I don't know where to put this person. And I think a lot of times in the industry I've dealt with, I don't know where to put this person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, cute girl. Okay. I get that. Artsy, like, existential, like songs about existential crises. Like, I don't know what to do with this. I don't know what to do with her. You know, black girl, alternative music. Like, I don't know where to put you. And I think that's the major thing that I've just dealt with as a musician, being kind of between so many things, or even being between fashion and music, or art and music, or straddling all of these different lines, I think has been the main thing that's hard for people to kind of understand about. They're kind of just like, what does she do? So I think that's been the main thing, more than the sexual over-sexualization. But I think what everyone wants to do is like their prerogative. I never like rag on myself for that. Like I'm never like, I should do this more, I should do that more. That's just something that I know that it's just not my personality. So even if I did go in that direction, I feel like it would just be really like kind of awkward.
Well, no, that's what I love so much about everything you just said is it. I know we just talked about like this term of authenticity is like hard to come by or really understand these days, but it does feel like you stay true to who you are, and like you're not essentially, I'm going to sell my soul and do something I don't really want to do or isn't in tune with my personality just to like potentially sell some more records or, you know, gain some more Instagram followers, la-di-da-di-da.
Yeah. Yeah. But I do think about it. It's almost like something that it's just a no-brainer for me, but I think I'm always so interested in like, are these conscious decisions that other people make where they're like, so I need to post this amount of these kind of thirst traps. I got to post that. Like, are these real decisions that are made? Because it's for me, it's the opposite.
100%. Oh man, totally. I think even like what people choose to wear in music videos or their photo shoots, like, I don't know, I'm thinking specifically of like WAP.
Yeah.
Like, don't you think that they had like meetings being like, oh, this is going to be really controversial and like the numbers are going to go crazy, like not even so much about the actual song as it is like just the lyrics and that we're saying these outlandish, very sexual, provocative things.
Yeah. I think the world is at this place where every time you go on the internet, everyone's attempting to break the internet. You know, it's one of those things where people just want those, you know, viral like impressions. And I think it's cool. It's not the way that I like make things, but I do think it definitely gets attention. It definitely gets eyes on you. And I think if you can play with it, like I believe also like Lil Nas X, he's always constantly trolling. And like, if you can play with like, if you understand the algorithm or you understand ways to beat it, then by all means, like beat it, you know, but I don't know.
I think if you have the self-awareness.
Yes. But
that's what's like sick. And you're not just a pawn in like someone else's, like the music or the record labels, like scheme, chess game.
Yeah, exactly. If it's something that you're like, I really want to, cause in a way it almost becomes like, it is art of course, but in a way it becomes even a deeper art conversation, about like what is important to people today. And like, how
social experiments.
Exactly. Like, it becomes this other thing. And then that for me is really interesting to think about. Like just the what makes people tick and what makes people excited today. And you can play with that in so many different ways. I think some artists do such a good job. Like I feel like Kanye West is the king of that as well. Just like understanding how to manipulate social and
perceptions.
Yeah. And there really is an art to it. I haven't figured it out for myself what that is. But I think it is quite interesting. But like you said, when you're self-aware about it and it's a part of your art practice, I think it's really, really nice. Or you're doing it to be like, hey, like I'm trying to normalize this, or I'm trying to bring attention to this. Cool. But I think when it's pushed on you from someone else, it's a completely different story. And yeah. Like the implications of it can be different for people that are not aware. They may believe that, oh, this is how I have to be to get this big, you know?
And it's getting younger and younger. But it's almost like when I think of Kanye or like, no, like I almost think of him as like a performance artist. I don't think he would maybe call himself that, but like I think he's a genius. But to me, it's almost this act of performance art.
I would definitely consider him a performance artist.
Right?
Yeah. It's very nuanced and It's like playing with the world and using the entire world as your, you know, creative experience.
Your stage, yeah. Or like Madonna was on Jimmy Fallon, and she's someone who took her sexuality like in the 80s when it wasn't as normalized and like really used that in her art, and it was like a main part of it. And she literally talked about in the interview, like, some people just don't have the vision to like really understand what I'm doing or what artists are doing. Like, there's just a lot of people who just don't, they don't have the understanding.
Yeah, there's so many ways to look at art. Like, you can look at it on so many different levels. Like, you can hear a song and be like, this is a cool song. Or you can really appreciate the references in the music. Or you can appreciate the actual chords. Or there's so many deep ways to listen to music. And there's so many ways to digest culture and its references and what anything can mean. So I believe good art has those layers, where it's like you're able to dissect it on so many different levels. You can write like an essay about a music video, or you can write, like, yes, there's stuff that's rich. You know, it's rich with things to explore, which is what I like about art.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, the podcast is on like mental health. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to share with the listeners, we were connected through a close friend of both of us who has since passed away. And I just want to talk a little bit like about him and, yeah, your relationship with him, because I know how close you guys were.
Yeah.
Not only like emotionally, but also work-wise. And I don't know, just about the loss and like, has that inspired any of your recent work? And
yeah. So me and Justin have been our best friends for like over 10 years we've known each other. I met him at that first New York party, and we became really close friends after that. And we live together. We went around the world together with the Kilo Quiche stuff. We have, you know, shared packs of dollar noodles when we didn't have any money, you know? So it was a very long relationship that kind of transcended different periods of our lives. And we both lived in LA at the same time. It kind of became like a brother-sister kind of relationship, and also creative partnership. So like, not having him around has made this leg of like my creative journey so strange. It's been, obviously the loss is huge just on an emotional level, but it's not having the additional, you know, not having that partnership has really changed the way that I work. And it's been really hard to kind of like get started and to finish things, because like, you don't realize how much someone is informing and helping you to make decisions until they're not there to help you make them. And I'm realizing now through therapy and things like that, that I was always like leaning on him to give me reassurance on my ideas. Like, he was the person that if I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. I'm a very like wishy-washy person. So I'm always like, should I do this? Should I not do this? It's like, I'm very like, I can like tie myself in knots of thinking. So not having that person to be like, Quiche, it's fine, leave it. Like, not having that person that you trust to do that. I'm having to learn to do that for myself. Cause obviously the relationship will never be replaced. Like, there's never going to be another J. Scott, you know? So yeah. It's one of those things of, I have to teach myself that now, to do that on my own and to empower myself on my own, and it's been really hard because he died right before, like right at the beginning of the pandemic. So we just been home since then, and I've been just here trying to finish album and finish packaging and finish like creative ideas for our other projects we were doing. And it's just like very difficult.
Yeah, I found out in such a bizarre way, because I didn't have a phone when he passed away. Whoa. Like, I had written him a letter. So I was away living in Boston doing like kind of like a mental health retreat I was in a residential program at the psychiatric hospital in Boston, and I didn't have a phone for 5 months.
Wow.
And I wrote him a letter. Like, they gave me my phone to text him, be like, what's your most recent address? So I wrote him a letter. I have no idea if he even got the letter, because I believe it was like arriving right around the time, like the days when he passed. But I went on my phone at one point, like, to talk to my dad or something, and I checked his Instagram, and I just went on his page, and the most recent Instagram, it was like all the comments were like, rest in peace. And that's how I found out. And it was just so and I had to hand my phone back too, but it was such a bizarre way to find out. But I don't know, loss is such a complex and like fascinating thing as a human, because I've gone through different losses, as everyone does. And I just think they can all affect you so differently.
It made me, at first, at the beginning, well, I was on tour when I found out. It was actually kind of crazy. He was supposed to be staying with me, and then all like he didn't respond, and so I felt this weird feeling. And then I woke up in the night and he didn't respond. And I just was like, that's not like him. And the next day I just woke up and I was just bawling. I just like, I didn't have the no, but I already knew. Like, I knew when I woke up in that night, like, we were so connected that I just was like, you're not here. Like, mom. Like, I just, and my boyfriend, I'm preparing for a show and I'm just crying the whole day trying, but I still don't even know what's happened yet. And so through the course of the day, we're like looking and trying to find him and all of this. And I get to the venue, getting ready to play the show, and then I get the news. So I don't even know what happened. I just left, like ran out of the venue, and I just got back to the hotel, and I obviously didn't play the show, but the next day I had a show. You know, and the next day I had to decide if, like, am I going to continue this tour? I've been already on tour for, like, I have a month left, or like however many weeks left of this tour, and I can't really leave it. And Justin wouldn't have wanted me to leave the tour. So it kind of was, it was hard. It was like, I was happy that I had the tour at that time, just in the first week or two, just to not be at home only thinking about nothing. It gave me something to continue to not completely lose myself in for like the first 2 weeks. Then when I got home, it was hard. I still had a lot more work. I had more shows. I had press. And I look at the pictures around that time period and I just look like a shell. Like, I just look like vacant, you know? And then when I finally was able to rest, it kind of was the pandemic essentially. And that's the moment that I had time to actually process it a month or so later, because I still was on and people were still needed me to do things. And all the while we're figuring out stuff with, you know, his living situation, and we're packing his things and we're doing all these things, but it was very hard. And then the pandemic started and I just was like, I need to get in therapy for this, because this is going to hit me like a ton of bricks, because I know I haven't been processing it for 3 weeks and I know it's going to all come at the same time. And I think for me, I felt, luckily, I knew where we stood as people. Like, so I had that knowing that there was nothing but purity between us. So I didn't feel like there was something left unsaid, or there was something that we knew each other so well that I didn't have those kind of thoughts. But I did feel really bad. I felt almost guilty that he spent so much time helping me and we never got to do the things together that we wanted to do. So that was very hard for me to, like, I felt guilty for taking up so much of his time as well. So those were things that I had to process and like figure out. But yeah, every day is different. It's been almost a year and a half, 2 years now. And it's like, some days I'm like, Justin would like this. Justin would like this. Like, I'm like, some days, great. But a few days ago, I just like, was like, I can't do this without him. You know what I mean? And so it comes and goes, but loss is so interesting. It's like, but you know that the person is living through the things that
you're doing,
do together. And you, every time you take a step forward in those things that we had spent so many years working on, it's a step forward as well for him. So it's loss is hard. Like it was my first real, like, loss, you know, in my life. Yeah. Like I've had my grandparents and things like that die, but they were older and you expect that. So I think having like a really close person to me that was almost like a brother, like that was really, really hard. And I know you guys were so close as well.
Yeah, I had experienced such different loss. Like I lost my mom when I was really, really young girl, but like I almost felt like this loss hitting me as an adult almost triggered or kind of brought up things that I hadn't even processed from other loss in my life. But I don't know. I feel like I had the support this time around, as in like I was in therapy. I happened to be in a treatment program while this happened, that it was almost like set up for someone to kind of catch me or be like, it's going to be okay. I just want to ask you, like, do you have any advice, you know, having gone through that and as an artist, for someone who's listening who has recently experienced loss?
Yeah, I think the only advice I have is that it's a day by day thing. It's like some days are great, some days are, you know, in bed crying. You know what I mean? It's really hard. I think for me, therapy definitely helped. It definitely helped. I also saw, I don't know if like, I saw kind of like a healer who was able to do this exercise with me where, because I was having a lot of trouble letting go of the responsibility of him. I mean, I was his emergency contact. I was like his best, like I felt personally responsible for that person in the world. And I think that it was hard for me to let go of the responsibility of that and like let him go into wherever, you know, heaven, wherever, you know. And she was able to do an exercise with me where she was like, Keish, you can let go of Justin. Justin has to, you know, do what he needs. Like Justin's gone. You have to actually let go of the responsibility. So I think having safe spaces where you're able to really, really try on those ideas for size in your mind and having the safety to do so. Thankfully, I have a job where, I mean, I don't have to be at the same place every day, like at work every day where people are, you know, clocking how I am day to day. I do have the luxury of being able to be like, I need 2 weeks to myself to do something. But I think even if you have like a really like, you know, 9-to-5 kind of job, it's like, try if you can to have therapy or have somebody, because your friends, honestly, like your close friends will deal with it with you, but I feel like it's hard to talk to people about loss. People are like, okay, yeah, it happened. Like, you know what I mean? After a while, they're kind of like, they don't really want to hear it. So I think having someone that you're able to talk to, it who's not going to get, like, not going to get, like, annoyed about it. Like, I think having a therapist or somebody like that is really, really helpful. It helped me in journaling and being able to really think about them and think about taking the time to honor them as well and to think about them. And, but yeah, I'm still figuring it out. It's been 2 years, but because of the nature of the way we used to work together, every day feels a reminder of like the things that he would normally do this and he would normally do this, or, oh, I don't know how to do that, 'cause that's what Justin would normally do. So every day it kind of like brings it up. And I'm sure when I play my first shows and as I have milestones in my career, it'll always be a reminder. So I think as much as you can make it comfortable for you to think about the person, you know, and keep that space open, it just makes it easier when you have to go through your life without them.